Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Real Talk with Raquel. Today we will be talking about bullying and how it affects us growing up. The person that I am interviewing, I've known for over 23 years, and I hope everyone enjoys it as much as I did while recording it. And a side note, I just wanted to thank everyone for listening to me and for supporting me and for all the beautiful text messages and just calls of how I'm doing with this. It feels amazing because it's something I've wanted to do forever. So I really, really appreciate every single one of you. And yeah, here we go. Enjoy. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, Nana. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm pretty happy. It's Friday here in Mexico City. Nice weather. And going to get some tamales pretty soon.
Yum. It's hot here. It's 107.
Damn, 107 degrees.
Yes, I am watching my son swim while I'm in the air conditioner.
My bald ass head would melt in 107 degrees.
Yeah, it's hot. It's going to be here, like that for a week.
Here in Mexico City, it's usually around 72 degrees all day long. It's beautiful.
Oh, I love wow. It. That's nice. I didn't know it was that cool over there.
Yeah, most people think that Mexico City is hot because it's Mexico. But no, it really is a beautiful temperature. I mean, the coldest it gets here, it's gotten below zero sometimes. Not, I'm talking about centigrade, but Fahrenheit, it gets to maybe 32 one day out of the year. Usually in the wintertime, it's like 50 degrees, 60. Bad. Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's nice. Well, can you introduce yourself and give me a little bit of a backstory?
Yeah, my name is Joseph. My friends call me Joe. I was born in Chicago back in 1976. And I currently live in Mexico City just because of work and because I love it here. But I grew up in Chicago a long time ago. And I don't know what other background I can give you other than my parents are Mexican. I speak Spanish and English and other languages, but my parents were really strict on me speaking Spanish at home. And I went to school in Chicago. I also went to school in Wisconsin and then studied other places to get my degree in audiology. I'm an audiologist. So my job is to check people's hearing and make sure that their auditory system is working well. And I travel the world teaching as well. So I've traveled to about 60 countries, but my favorite one is here in Mexico.
Has that been your favorite? What's been your favorite part of the world that you've visited?
I think my most favorite part of the world that I visited is probably two, Thailand and Spain. Thailand, because people are super, ultra, mega nice. I mean, I've never seen friendlier people than in Thailand. And in Spain, it's great because their lifestyle is just so free. They live outside. They don't live on their cell phones. They don't live on their computers. Once they finish work, they go outside. They have conversations with people, actual conversations, and they drink wine and eat wonderful food and they spend their life socializing.
They give you time.
Yes, they give you time and attention.
A lot of people are going to grow up not knowing what that is.
Especially the current generation, yes. Right? My nephews spend, I swear to God, they were here last weekend and they spent the whole day playing on their Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I mean, they come here because they want to visit us. I'm like, what are you visiting, kid? Like, you're visiting, I think he's just like my high-speed internet.
Yeah. That's about it. Yeah, it's amazing how they don't have conversations. I remember when I was their age, we had Nintendo and my sister had the Atari when I was real little, but we played outside from dusk, you know, till dusk. We were able to come into the house. And I think that's why I have such a good imagination with playing, because I loved doing that.
I didn't have too many friends growing up. I had maybe one or two friends, and I do remember being outside back in the 80s and playing with my friends. I had one girlfriend, a friend that's a girl, not a girlfriend.
Right.
A romantic. But I remember playing hopscotch with her and then riding bikes and playing hide and seek and doing all this fun stuff that kids really don't do today.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be the subject today. We have touched on the subject a couple times, and I really wanted to get your side of the story and how you went through it and how you became such a positive person. And we're going to talk about being bullied in school and growing mm-hmm. up and how your childhood was and just in general. What age do you remember getting picked on, and why do you think it happened?
Yeah, it's a hard subject for me to talk about.
You okay?
Spilling my wine over here.
That's not good.
I need wine to talk about this stuff. It's a really hard subject to talk about, and I don't speak to it. I haven't spoke about it in a long time, and when I have spoken about it, it's been very general. Like, yeah, I got bullied when I was in school, but I've never really gotten into the deep end because it's painful. It's really painful to think about how many years I spent being bullied, not only in grade school, but also in high school to some extent, and even afterwards. And I think the first recollection that I've had being bullied was in kindergarten.
Really?
Yeah. I remember being bullied in kindergarten just because I didn't have the crayons that the rest of the kids had. So, you know, I know it sounds really stupid, but my parents could only afford to buy me the crayons with the, you know, 8 count.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And you remember the crayons that had like,
yes,
I don't know,
the 24
50, you know, and something the 12. Like 24. And they even had a sharpener on it.
Yes. I remember.
Well, yeah, I had crayons that were the 8 count, and they weren't even the crayon brand. They were some other brand. And so, you know, the kids looked at me and said, "Well, are you poor, or is, you know, can't your parents afford it?" or stuff like that. And they started pushing me to the side. The other thing is that I don't know if it's a Latin thing, you know, for Latin Americans or what it is, but my parents hardly ever cut my hair. I was not chubby then, but I wasn't really well kept. My mom's gonna, if she hears this, she's gonna get pissed off because she'd be like, what are you talking about? I combed your hair every single day. The truth is my parents were very, very busy people.
Yeah.
They worked at factories since they were 18, 19 years old. My mom had me when I was, when she was 20, 21 years old.
She was very young.
She was super young. I mean, she was super, super young, and they needed to work. And they had gone to school, but my mom graduated as an accountant, but spoke no English. My dad didn't graduate from school, and they needed to work. So what kind of jobs could they get as illegal immigrants? Well, they went to work at factories. Mm-hmm. And so they worked from 7 a.m. in the morning till about, I'd say, 4 p.m., sometimes 6, sometimes 8 p.m., and so me and my siblings were alone most of the time. So it was up to us to get dressed sometimes, to comb our hair and all and whatnot. And a lot of times we got it wrong, right?
Oh, like, yeah. My sister did my hair.
Now, see, and so what kid knows how to get dressed in the morning? So anyways, I used to go to school and used to get my hair wrong and whatever. And the kids used to laugh at me at a very, very early age. And I remember my first rejection from a girl was in kindergarten. You know how it is as a kid, right? You hold a little girl's hand.
Yeah, and
stuff like that. But she's like, don't touch me, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I remember that. That's even though it sounds like, oh, you were in kindergarten, it's just kids, it's still scarring to some degree because it wasn't the only time. And then as time progressed, as I started going to first grade and second grade, I started gaining weight. And I think that's due to the fact that my parents weren't really home much. And my dad was an alcoholic. And so my mom, when she would try to comfort us because dad wasn't home, or when he would get home, he would be a mess. was through food. Like, hey, do you want some Burger King? Do you want some Kentucky Fried Chicken? And because all that nice salty and sweet stuff would make my brain feel better,
You
that's what I used.
emotionally ate.
I emotionally ate, and I still do. I still emotionally
I
eat.
do
I
too.
use food as comfort,
Me too.
and it's not usually salads, right? It's
No,
usually stuff
it's
full of
the
fruits.
Mexican bread and the cheeses and the starches.
Pizzas and all that stuff, right? That's how I started that. I started that a long time ago when I was really, really young. And
So how old were you when you started gaining weight? What grade do you think you were in?
I think I was in second grade. Yeah, second, third grade. I was starting to gain weight, and there wasn't a lot of scientific research into obesity in children, you know. And so, oh, he's just a little chubby. It's okay, you know. And I remember my parents every weekend they would take us to Burger King for the 2-for-1 Whoppers and stuff like that, and ice cream and all that stuff. And that's how they would try to like compensate for not being home. And again, my parents would probably not agree with what I'm saying, but
My
that's the way I
parents
saw
would take us to the mall, my sister and I, to
it.
compensate the 12 hours that they weren't with us and we were being babysat. Every Saturday, we would go to the mall. Sundays, we would be at church all day.
All day long. Yeah, and it's the emotional eating is something that we've had for a long time. I know that it's probably no secret that you struggle with emotional eating as well, right?
Yes, I
Like when you
do.
feel bad, just like me, it's like we go to the ice cream or whatever. And
And then I feel guilty after I do it. But I'm proud to say I have not emotionally ate for about 4 months now.
Oh, that's wonderful.
I mentally set myself.
That's fantastic.
So
I haven't emotionally ate for like 3 days. I'm serious. Like I don't, especially now with the quarantine, it's been really tough because you know, there's job insecurity, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the world, and with the riots and all that stuff, even though I'm in Mexico City, it still affects me to some degree. I've looked at food for comfort. And I remember coming home from school every day after being bullied because as second grade, third grade started, the boys would start using me as a punching bag. And I was so afraid not to go to the bathroom. Like if I, for example, wanted to go to the bathroom, you know, I had to really, really go to the bathroom because I knew that if I went to the bathroom, two or three of the boys that would bully me would meet me there and beat me up. And they would beat me up pretty bad. Like they
Where
would
were
punch
the
me.
teachers?
The teachers were teaching, you know,
Did
and
you
the
ever
teachers,
did you ever did you ever
yeah.
want to tell a teacher?
I told the teacher that wasn't good back then. I don't know about now. I don't know how schools are today, but back then it was like, you know, you need to solve these problems yourself, Joe. You know, you need to stand up to these bullies. But they would never talk to them. Like it was, they wouldn't, and that would just kill me.
School is really
You know.
different with bullying now, I'm glad to say. It's a very, very sentimental subject for me because while you're my son's godfather, you know, it's hard to have a son that's autistic and
Sure.
not know what's going to happen. I'm going to tell you a really quick story. There was a morning that I walked in with Jose Angel last year and he had to go to the bathroom. You can just tell. He doesn't speak, but you can tell. And I told the teacher he needs to go to the restroom. The teacher's like, they're having a conference in the classroom, or so there was something going on in the classroom that I couldn't go in the classroom because they have their private bathroom. So they're like, you can take him to the public. He knows how to use the restroom. And I'm like, okay. But you can't walk in there because it's rules from the school. I'm like, okay. You do not have any clue the anxiety. I'm just talking about it right now. My hands are getting sweaty. He walked in there. I told him, okay, go to the restroom. And he went. And then there was two boys in there. And they're like, hey, close the door. We don't want to see your butt. What are you doing? He's showing us his thing. What's wrong with you? Can't you hear us? And when the kids came out, I stopped them and I grabbed the principal and I told the principal, can you explain to them that he's a special needs child? Blah, blah, blah. And ever since that happened, I am definitely afraid of my son going to the bathroom, especially now that he's going to go into sixth grade, because it's sixth, seventh, and eighth graders now. So just the simple fact as a mom to know that there's still a lot of bullying going around, I cannot imagine that you didn't have that support.
Yeah, no, I did not have that support.
I'm sorry, Joel, that you didn't have that.
It was hard. And I'd never told my parents.
Because you were embarrassed?
I was embarrassed. I was scared. I was like, you know, it's just a kid doesn't know what to think. And then if they don't have the tools, then what do you do? Right.
Yeah.
And you know what I did? I skipped school. I skipped school for 3 days in I think it was third or fourth grade, something like that.
Where did you go?
I went home. I'll tell you the story. I would get dressed to go to school. My parents would leave before I would need to leave for school.
Uh-huh.
And I'd be like, all right, mom, goodbye, see you. And they would leave. And then I would just stay home. And then, I was in my uniform and stuff. And I got to the point when it was 3 days in a row. And when they would come back, they would ask me, hey, what did you have for lunch? And I had like, oh, I had a hot dog and some fries. And I would even stain my shirt with ketchup.
Wow. So that
like that. And it was on the third day that they actually found out, because the principal called them. He's like, hey, your son has not come to school and we don't know where he is. And they're like, what do you mean you don't know where he is? And so they came home and I heard them coming. And so I hid in the dirty laundry. There was a lot of dirty laundry. I hid in a dirty laundry. My parents were freaked out, and my mom found me. And nothing really happened. I mean, I thought I was going to get a super beating, but I didn't get a beating. But they took me to school that same day, and the principal who was one of the toughest principals probably in the U.S., sat me down and yelled at me. She was a nun, and she told me, "Hey, she set me straight. She set me straight." After that, I never missed school. I got almost straight A's all the time, and if it wasn't for her, I think I would have been messed up in life.
You would have gotten in the wrong road.
I think so. I mean,
do you want to say her name?
Yeah, Patricia. Her sister Patty was her name. Back at Maternity BVM grade school in Chicago,
uh-huh.
And she passed away this year.
Oh,
and that hurt. My mom told me, "Hey, Sister Patty passed away." And I sat down and I thought about how she actually saved me,
uh-huh.
You know, from myself, from this destructive path I was taking because of all the bullying, and I couldn't help but. Thank her out loud for everything that she did for me, because if it wasn't for her, I wouldn't be where I am.
Wow.
Seriously. Like, I wouldn't know.
It's amazing the people that impact you in life and they don't even realize it.
A lot of people don't believe in God.
Right.
A lot of people don't believe in angels. I do.
I do too.
And I think that God puts certain people in your path to straighten you out.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now it's up to one to heed that advice and to change habits and to change your ways, but the people are there, the signs are there, the help is there.
Right.
You just need to be able to see it and to
accept
it. Right. And so from there, I became a really, really good student. But the bullying didn't stop. I mean, now you're a smart, hairy guy with that's chubby and smells weird.
We're forwarding to middle school now, I'm guessing.
Yeah, because when you're fat, it's really hard to wipe your ass. You know, it's. It's really hard. So,
I didn't think you were going to say that. I thought you were going to say it's really hard to keep your hygiene. I think you've had too much wine.
They didn't have any wet wipes back then, so you know. And my parents didn't buy the best toilet paper, so one ply is not enough.
So anyway. Forward to middle school.
Yeah,
you were smart. Obviously, we talked.
Was smart,
and you were still getting bullied. And now, was the bullying still the beating up, or was it more of a laughing, pointing?
It was laughing, pointing. getting kicked in the nuts, literally.
Oh my
Like,
God.
yeah, it was terrible. Nana. And
What?
doing displays like, I'm eating my lunch, and you know these hot lunches in these
Yes.
schools. Having somebody stand you up, putting their lunch on or your lunch on your seat, and having you sit down on it, and then smearing their lunch on your shirt. And that's how. And then what do you do? Like, you tell the teacher, "Hey, well, they did this." Like, well, stand up for yourself, Joe. They keep on saying that, and but you have no tools to fight that, and you're just scared all the time. And what do you do? I mean,
What did you
that
do?
I cried. That's all I could do, and I hated school. I hated it. I hated it with a passion. I hated it. Hate is not even a good word for it. It's something stronger than hate. I just really despised school, and I despised the fact that at this school it was kindergarten through eighth grade. So you're with the same
Kids.
fucking people all the time. There's no change in anything, and you're with the same kids, And there was kids that brought guns to school.
At back
Guns.
then, we're talking about the 80s.
Yes. We're talking about 1988, 89, 1990s when I graduated from grade school. Gun. I brought a gun to school and telling you, I'm going to shoot the, I'm going to fucking shoot you if you say something. What do you
So
say?
you did you grow up on a bad part of Chicago?
Yeah, I grew up in Humboldt Park,
Okay.
west side of Chicago, full of violence, drugs, a lot of fighting between Puerto Ricans, blacks, and Mexicans.
Yeah.
It was just, it's still a bad neighborhood. I mean, not today, it's more gentrified, but where my parents still live, it's still a bad neighborhood. It's not the
Were you
best.
bullied more by boys or by girls?
I was bullied more by boys physically, but I was bullied mentally by girls.
Wow.
Yeah, just a lot. I was a wreck, man. I don't know how I made it to where I am now, but I was a wreck.
So can we forward to high school?
Yeah, in high school, I went to a boarding school in Wisconsin,
All
and it's
four
a
years?
wonderful 3 years.
Okay.
I was there for 3 years. It's a seminary where you, I guess you go to church 3 or 4 times a week, and it's an all-boys school. It's in Wisconsin. You stay there for the whole school year. And it was a wonderful, wonderful school because that's where I got more in touch with God. In fact, I wanted to be a priest. I don't know if a lot of people know that, but I want to become a priest. And they teach brotherhood. And I think it was God-sent, another tool for me to change, who I was spiritually. But even then, I was bullied
There in
because,
that school. Wow.
These kids, these kids that come from, because they come from all over the world, really, but mostly from Chicago and Green Bay and Minneapolis, and these cities that are close by, and a lot of them come from cities, and a lot of them were bullies, and I hung out mostly with the white guys, and so the Mexicans would make fun of me, calling me a white boy. I had a really, really good friend, my best friend. His name is Doc. Doc Wondra, that's his nickname.
Are you still
They would
friends
say,
with him?
"Oh, yeah, I'm friends with him on Facebook."
Okay.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in such a long time, but he was my best friend. I mean, like my really, really best friend. And when you have a best friend, you wanna hang out with
Of
him all the
course.
time. Well, I started saying that I was fucking him, that I was
Oh,
gay,
wow.
all this stuff, and that shit hurts,
Of
right? Because
course,
it's
of course.
not true. It's just, and then you're like, well, I can't even have friends, and I can't even have white friends, and I can't even like rock, the alternative rock that they like Nirvana,
Yeah.
all this stuff, right? While the Mexican guys were wearing Jankos and listening to other music, I was more with what I liked, right?
Yeah.
And so I even found myself distanced from my own culture, and almost hating my culture,
Right.
like,
Where
yeah.
from what you were since kindergarten.
Yeah. So I left my junior year. My junior year was my final year there, and then I went to a high school in Chicago, which was even more screwed up because I was surrounded by drugs
So
again.
you were a senior.
I was a senior. Yeah, I was a senior, and I had to I had to be with seniors who were into drugs, who were into drive-by shootings, who were into all this stuff, right? And they would, I mean, I made friends, but they weren't good friends. I mean,
Right,
they were all,
acquaintances.
yeah, they were in all this mess, but I just
Did you
wanted to fit
feel
in.
like you had to be friends with certain people in high school?
You have to
I
be
didn't
friends,
feel like
otherwise.
I had to, but I'm asking you.
Yeah, I felt I did.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would just cause problems. So, you know, when you are in grade school, you want to be with the cool kids. But if you're not cool, then, you know, you can't be with them. And so I was like, well, I'm gonna try to change myself so I can fit in with this crowd. And I did. And I did. I mean, I was in a car with a attempted drive-by shooting,
Wow.
and I was in a house with a whole bunch of cocaine and marijuana. I never did any of that stuff. I mean, I didn't drink until I was 21
Right.
because of that those teachings that I had, you know, from school, not from school, but from church and from
Right.
being really, really, really close to God. I mean, I had conversations with him and he would promise me that someday things would be better, but that I had to go through this stuff to learn. And I think that what this helped me as a person was to be much more understanding of kids who are going through it, right? Of kids who are you know who are different from the rest, you know, who you know. I even got bullied because I didn't have Nike shoes, right? I had whatever my parents could buy from Kmart or from Zaire, you know, back in the
Yeah,
day.
La Saida.
La Saide,
La Saida.
exacto. La Saide, I don't say La Saide, that's
Yeah.
right. But they weren't, you know, or Payless, right?
Right.
And people were wearing Giorgio Brutinis. You remember Giorgio Brutinis? They were wearing Nike shoes, and I never had that. I mean, I never had none of that. So you get bullied because of that. And so I had to go through all that stuff, and finally I got out of high school, and I made it out. And once I finally got out, I felt so free, Adriana. I felt
Wow.
so free. I felt like I got out of jail. You know, I felt like I got out of jail. I felt like I
Like you really grabbed that diploma and flew.
was like, fuck you all, I'm out. Just like that. You know, I don't know if you've seen I don't know if you've seen the Stoner movie. It's called Half Baked.
Yes, of course.
But do you remember when, what's his name? He quits. He's like, fuck you, you're cool, fuck you, I'm out.
Yeah,
Just
that's how
like
you
that. And
felt.
that's how I felt. That's how I felt. And I finally
So,
made it
when
here.
did you discover the Joe now? At what age? Did you decide that you were going to let all that go and just be
You can't let
kind?
it go.
You
You can't let
haven't.
it go. No, you can't ever let it go. And I don't think we should let it go.
Okay.
Because if you let it go, you might become what you don't want to be. You know, if you forget that stuff, if you get all those experiences, then maybe your heart won't be as soft, or I don't want to say soft because that maybe has a negative connotation.
Right.
But maybe you won't be as understanding as you could be, right? And I consider myself the people's champ, like The Rock, you know,
Yeah.
where I look out for people, right? And I look out for injustice. I look out for people who can't help themselves. I look out for those who need help, who are thirsty, who are hungry, who are being bullied, women who are being battered by men or even just verbally abused. I look out for those people, right? I look for children, you know, children like my nephew, children there's predators all around.
Oh, I know.
And I just that's who I am because of bullying. I'm not saying that people should be bullied to
No, no,
become,
no. Of course not. But
right?
that's what it
Because,
made you.
right. Although if I hadn't had the tools, how many children have commit suicide
Yes.
every single year, right?
Yes. It's so
How many
sad.
children, you know, cut their wrists or take pills or whatever, and just, you know, they're like, they're 12 freaking years old, 10
Yes.
years old, committing
Yes.
suicide.
Those are the saddest stories for me when I hear that they were being bullied and how they were being treated, or when you see on the news just adults just dragging kids down the hallway and just not treating them correctly.
And it all boils down to one thing: parents.
Parents.
Parents. Parents have, you know, oh, well, I can control. Yes, you can control who you are as a parent. Yes, you can control what you teach your children. Yes, you can control what tools you give your children, mm-hmm. so that they can get past all this stuff, right? You can control. You're a great mama. You're a great mama, Nana, because, I mean, you're there for your child. You are such a strong parent, and it's amazing. And my little nephew is so lucky to have you as a mom.
Thank you.
And I'm not saying that my parents were bad people. They just didn't have the tools as parents.
No, mine didn't either. But they came here to make a better life for us, and that meant not being around us. Now, and I think I've said it before, I get to enjoy my parents now. I've enjoyed my parents for the past 4 years because mm-hmm. they moved here to Texas. I'm finally getting to know what it is to have a mom and dad.
Yeah.
All the time. And it's wonderful. And I love it. And I hate this pandemic because I don't get to see them as often, but I do talk to them every day. But yeah. I used to resent them so much for not being around when I was a little girl. But now I thank them for working so much for my sister and I to have gotten out of that neighborhood. We used to live in Little Village. We got out of that neighborhood and we went to Richmond and 63rd. And then we got out of that neighborhood and they took us to Berwyn, which that's where we ended up, you know, staying until we moved here to Texas. But now we're all here and we might not get to see each other a lot, but at least we know that they're like right around the corner, not literally, but in the same distance.
Yeah.
And it's nice. And I think sometimes kids take that resentment and fly with it, and they don't have a good communication with their parents because they resent so much. Yeah. But if you just sat back and thought about it, and I don't know how many listeners have gone through this, but if you sit back and think about what our parents went through, especially them coming from another country, not knowing the language and being bullied themselves and discriminated, and then trying to raise kids in this country, it's a difficult thing once you think about it from a far away. And yeah, for sure. Now I want to get back to you. So you said you were chunky when you were little. Did you continue being chunky when you were in high school, and did that hurt you after you left high school, or did you lose weight?
As soon as I got into high school, one of the cross-country coaches, which is a running sport, came up to me and he's like, "Hey, Joe, how would you like to join the cross-country team?" And I'm like, "Are you serious? I mean, I haven't run. I don't run.
Yeah.
Like, I don't run unless somebody's chasing my ass, but I don't run."
Right.
And sorry, my dog.
That's okay. I have two dogs too.
And he's like, "No, I would like you to join." And I was super overweight, Nana. And he's like, I want you to join. I don't want you to be first place, but I want you to give it your all."
Right.
And so every single day, five times per week, and even sometimes Saturdays, he would, and this is a really important story. This is a really important story. He would call practice. It was right after school. And we would practice for about an hour and a half, which was a 5 mile run almost every single day. And he would push us hard, and he would tell me, "Joe, you can do better than that." Like, I would wobble. Like, I would walk most of the time, but he's like, "Joe, I want you to push. I don't want you to walk. I want you to jog at least. I want you to be a brisk pace, whatever it is, Joe, but don't walk." Mm-hmm. So I did that. And the school was on top of a huge ass hill. I mean, we had to go down the hill and come back up, and it's a 5 mile run.
Wow.
Anyway, After a few months of this, I lost a whole bunch of weight, like a lot, to the point where I got skinny. Mm-hmm. And then I had to run my first race, my very first race.
How did that go?
So I started, it's like three or four high schools, and you start off on this line, and there's maybe about 70 or 80 kids on the line. And the gun goes off and you start running, and there's the course, and you run through mud and you run through grass and you run on the road and you run up and down hills for about 3.6 miles, mm-hmm. something like that. And I remember running, and I wasn't in last place. My very first race, I was in second to last place. Mm-hmm. playing against this other kid who was also as bad as I was. But I remember the very last few, the last mile. In the last mile, I mean, everybody had finished. Everybody was done with the race. It was just me and this kid, and we're running. And we're running up the hill, and the people were cheering like crazy. They were cheering for the both of us. And I had my team cheering for me. Hey, Joe, come on, man, you can do it. Push. And I would, and then some kind of energy would be instilled in me, and I don't know where it would come from, but I would just push myself. I mean, my legs were just killing me. I was out of breath. I felt like I was just going to puke right there, but people would push me. And then the last few 100 feet, you know, when you can see the finish line right in front and you're neck to neck with this kid, right? And you both are just like hobbling down.
Yeah.
And people are just cheering, Joe, you can do it. And I would just push myself, and I came second to last place. I did not come to last place, but it might as well have been first place.
That's how you felt.
Because that's how I felt.
You know what that did for your self-esteem?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that really, that day, and talking about it now, Nana, is when I'm realizing that that was the point. When I knew that I could do or change who I was and be whatever I wanted to be.
You hate that I cry, but I'm crying.
Well, it's funny.
Oh, that's so nice.
That was that point. And it was like they lifted me up, and they were like, hey, man, it was like I won first place, I'm telling you. And it was that point when I knew that I could do anything I wanted to and be whatever I wanted to be. And as time progressed, I became stronger. As time progressed,
mentally too, I'm sure.
Yeah, mentally. I meant mentally. Oh, okay. Yeah, definitely. Physically, I was a scrawny kid. Like, people would be like, hey, man, you should lift weights or something. And I'm like, damn.
You're not scrawny anymore, Joe.
No, I'm not scrawny anymore. But back then, you don't think about how you're going to be in the future.
Right. Like,
you're going to grow into this man, right? And you're going to get, you know, muscles and stuff if you want that. But it was then that I knew that I could be whatever I wanted to be and push myself. And that's, I think that's the key, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be involved in things where people are with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you can feel the energy from other people in a positive way,
yes,
instead of being in a negative way where people are just pushing you down and kicking your ass and smearing lunch on you and spitting on you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's the environment that kids need. Kids need that sort of thing. I've seen videos of my nephew, you know, people are cheering for him and stuff. And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I see his smile, right? And that's the tools that kids need.
Yeah.
Kids need that kind of environment.
Mm-hmm. And what did all this do to your love life, if you don't mind me asking?
So when I lost the weight, like I think my first girlfriend, I was maybe 16 or 17 years old. And it really helped me because I felt confidence.
Good.
And you need confidence.
Good.
to be with a girl, right?
Yes.
To even ask her out, right? And you need that
guts.
Confidence. You need a lot of guts. I mean, it's super scary. You know, if I had a date all over again, I'd be like, fuck that. I'm just going to stay single for the rest of my life.
You would get that bad of anxiety?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, really, really,
wow.
Really bad. Like, really bad. Like, I couldn't even talk to girls. But once you get past that first girlfriend.
Yeah, it's easy.
Then it's easy, right? But then, you know, it's that first heartbreak. That one really screws you up. That's another thing, heartbreak, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast on that. Maybe I'll add you on to that one. That's one of my next ones.
Yeah, I remember being depressed for 6 months with my first heartbreak.
Oh, wow.
Like clinically depressed. I'm not talking about just like, oh, I'm sad. No, I'm talking about in bed for 6 months. It was really bad.
Wow.
But all those emotions, I think that if you know how to harness that negative energy and get those moments where you can thrive, you know, like my race and get past that bridge to the other side, there's no stopping you. And you become such a better person.
Mm-hmm.
You become such a good, I mean, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I know I'm a good person.
Yes, you
I
are. I'll toot it for you. And you have a beautiful wife.
I do have a beautiful wife, and
And
she's
she, you
having a
guys
great
have such a beautiful relationship. I mean, no relationship is perfect, but I love the way you guys are with each other, and you guys know that.
It's because she is my wife, Samantha, is like me. We have the same heart. And we watch Grey's Anatomy, and she tells me that I'm her person and she is my
Yeah,
person.
I love Grey's Anatomy. My
Yeah.
person is me. She knows that. But yeah, that's beautiful. I think that when you find that one person, it just makes your world a better place.
I used to. Because of my insecurities, I used to be like, oh, why can't I find the right person? I used to try and try and try. And it's true. When you stop trying is when you find her, is when you find that person, you
Yeah.
know, that you don't have to try as hard. They just show up. Like I said, God puts these people in your path and all of a sudden, you know, things are right. But you do have to have a good heart. Like you do have to have good intentions.
Yeah.
You do have to. And the kids who are bullies, I mean, why are they bullies? You know, it's not because they want to be bad kids. It's just because their environment is not a good environment, or they've hung out with the wrong crowd, or their parents are not home, or they're divorced or drunks or whatever it is. And sometimes there are the few exceptions where a kid is just a bad kid, even though the parents are great people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, have you ever encountered any of your bullies when you got older?
Actually, yes,
You
I encountered
did.
them. I encountered them. I'm going to say like 2 years ago on Facebook. You know how Facebook, you know, you can find anybody.
Yeah.
And
How did that go?
it went really well. Found out that two of the bullies are dead, gunshots
Wow.
back when they were young. But three of them found me, and they expressed right away how sorry they were for everything that they did to me.
That's awesome that they
Yeah.
recognize that they did that to you.
Yeah, and
I
they're
applaud them on the side because it's hard to do to realize that
Yeah.
you were a bad person and you have, you yourself tell yourself, I have to apologize to this human being.
Yeah, they apologize. Like, I'm really, really sorry for anything that I did to you when we were young. I was stupid and stuff like that. And I said, I forgive you, man. I don't worry about it. It's water under the bridge.
Wow. And that says a lot about your heart.
Because forgiveness is important to move on.
Oh, huge. We were just
Yeah.
talking about this in my other, I recorded a podcast earlier and we were talking about that, how sometimes we need to forgive without having that person say, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. They don't even have to say you're
No.
sorry.
And you
You
just,
just forgive them.
yep. And that makes you feel so much better.
And it's so hard for so many people, and understandably so, it's so
Yes,
hard.
it is.
But you gotta do
You
it. You
have
gotta
to
do
do
it. You
it.
gotta, you know, I forgive this person for having done this to me, and then you move on.
Yep. And it's a whole weight off your shoulders. It's like
Yeah.
like you said, it's like a brand new life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And God kept on blessing me. I mean, when I was a kid, I told you I had a girlfriend, a friend that was a girl. Jenny was her name. Jenny from the block, literally. White girl. I mean, she was my first friend. She was my first best friend. And
Yeah.
I would go over to her house. And I'm like, damn, man, what's all this? White people be living good. I'm
Happened
like,
to me too.
yeah, you got cable? Holy shit. You know?
Your own room to play
Yeah,
video
you got your
games?
own room, man. You
You
got
have two
what?
TVs?
Exactly. You got popsicles? Holy shit.
And the good kind.
They're not from Aldi.
That's funny.
But in that moment, you're like, even if you're a kid, you're like, oh, I'm never gonna, that's just a dream. Like, we're never gonna have this. This is not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I grew up my whole life like that, like admiring white people's homes and people who had things and cars and stuff like that. And I'm like, I would never have that. And then when I would fly to Mexico to visit my grandparents, I would see first class, and I would be like, man, who the hell sits here? Man, you gotta have a lot of
Yeah.
money to sit here and stuff like that. And As I you know, studied my profession and you know, doing all the things that I do as an audiologist, and I remember, Nana, the first time I went on a transatlantic flight, because I always wanted to travel. And I'm like, one day I sat down and I'm like, God, please, one day I would like to travel. I don't have the money to travel, but I would like to. I don't know how. And so anyway, that's when I met my ex-girlfriend, and I moved to Mexico for her, and we broke up. And years later, they called me from the company, and they're like, hey, Joey, we need you to come to Minneapolis because we want you to be the international training director. And the only problem, Joe, is that and I hope this isn't a problem, but the only problem is that you're going to have to travel a lot all over the world. I'm like, what?
What
are you talking about? So anyways, I moved to Minneapolis with my wife, with Samantha, and a few weeks later, after I had moved, they're like, okay, here's your ticket to Paris, France. We're going to do a training there. And so I'm like, holy shit. So I got on the plane. I mean, I was already 36 years old. I mean, this wasn't that long ago when I got on the plane. And as soon as we started crossing the ocean, I'm like, holy shit, I'm crossing the ocean. And then we landed in Paris, and I got off the plane. I'm like, holy shit, I'm in another country. And, you know, I come out and people are speaking French, and I'm like, oh my God, what the hell is this? And I felt so, so blessed at that moment. And then, I mean, I got to go to Portugal and Spain and Italy and Kazakhstan and Pakistan, and India and China, Thailand, Japan, South Africa, and all over Latin America. And this is where I am now. I mean, this is my life. And I got to sit in first class and do all the things that, that I always dreamt about doing. And, you know, you want to say, well, I wish I had never been bullied in school, but I think, you know, in retrospect, I think those experiences helped me become
who
I
are.
Am today. And to, and because God put those tools, those people and those experiences in my life, I think that they were instrumental in developing me into the person that I am today, who is, so blessed and lucky, and I don't take it for granted ever. Whenever I get in an airplane, or whenever I look at my wife, or whenever I look at the things that I have, I mean, the material things that, you know, they come and go, whatever. But when I look at, you know, my family, when I look at you, Nana, and I look at my at my whole family and all the love that's around me, I got to say that I'm pretty, pretty damn lucky.
Yes. Yes, you are. And I'm a witness to you. I met you 24 years ago. I still remember the day I met you, full head of hair, blue contacts.
Wait a minute, let me make a correction. They were gray.
Oh, sorry, gray contacts. And I still remember you would tell me that I would be wearing contacts, and I wasn't, because you didn't believe that my eyes like, were green.
Man, your eyes cannot be that green.
How do I get those contact colors? They're not contacts.
I'm like, liar, liar, liar.
Yeah, you used to wear your K-Swiss with your khakis and a bunch of gel in that hair.
I miss wearing gel.
I know Joe when he had hair.
I miss wearing gel. One thing about hair that I miss is the gel.
Really?
God, I miss wearing gel. Like, you could sculpt your hair into any shape and form or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm completely bald. I shave my head just because I'm not good at hair anymore, and I just grew a beard. So, whatever.
Yeah.
It's good. My wife likes it.
Yeah. That's what counts. If you're happy with yourself, that's what counts.
I'm super happy with myself.
And that's how I want to end it. You being 100% happy, and that I have one question, and I think I'm going to start doing this with interviews like this. If you were to see little Joseph today in front of you, let's just say the 8-year-old, what would you do or say now, like at your age now?
I'd be like, hey, Joe, it's me, you, in about 35 years, everything's going to be okay, Joe. You're going to go through some rough stuff, and you have to. You have to, little guy. I know that you don't want to, and I know it's really rough right now, but I promise you that you're going to get out of this, and you're going to have a wonderful life. You're going to have a wonderful, wonderful life, little guy. And if I could, I'd give him a big hug. And gosh, that's hard to say. It makes me really emotional to hug
I'm crying.
myself. But I would give him a really, really, really tight hug and tell him everything's going to be all right, guy. Just keep going. Don't worry. Just keep going.
Yeah,
It's hard to say that.
it's hard to
God
think
damn it, Anna,
that. It's the wine, it's the wine. Blame it on your wine. Will you make sure you give your wife a hug for me? And I love you guys, and thank you so much for doing this with me.
No, thank you for inviting me. It's I know we were gonna do one before, but I think this was the right
It
moment.
was the timing, yes. It was a perfect timing. And I hope to have you back soon for any future subjects. And
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. Have a good evening.
You too. Take care.
Love you. Bye.
Love you too.